Gotta Bump That Bobby Brown. They was just playing that Bobby Brown movie on BET. A lot of folks forget Bobby Brown was that dude. Bobby Brown used to get it in. This was my shit. Anyway, man, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Tariq Radio. I'm your host. My name is Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have you guys in. And we're going to chop it up as we usually do. But what we're going to do, we're going to take that real quick commercial break. And we'll be right back right here on Tariq Radio. Don't you move a damn muscle, everybody.
Yo, you still ain't getting women? Really? Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game. And I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
Yo, cupcake season is right around the corner, family, and you need to get your fragrance game all up in order. So you need to check out ashkicking.com. That's a black-owned business that sells all-natural health and beauty products, and it also has fragrance products. You can get beauty products such as body butter, hair moisturizer, face moisturizer, unique incense burners, incense sticks, scented candles, and so much more. So again, you need to check out ashkicking, that's K-I-C-K-I-N,
From Charlottesville to the White House, white supremacist elements say there's only one way to maintain white control of America: open conflict. Black Channel Films presents the new documentary, Race War, featuring Judge Joe Brown, Richard Spencer, My Son, and more in the first film that examines all levels of American society to finally ask, is it still just racism, or is it a race war? For ticket information, go to our website, racewarmovie.com. That's racewarmovie.com.
It's time to get your workout game on and your fitness in order, so you need to go to blackdragonfitness.com. They have all types of workout and fitness accessories. They have boxing gloves, they have punching bags, they have boxing bags, kick bags, they also have bicycle accessories, they have bench pressing accessories, they have runner's vests, they have fitness watches, they have everything you need to get your fitness game in order. So again, go to blackdragonfitness.com. You got to get your body looking right so you can campaign correctly. Again, go to blackdragonfitness.com. Download the new album by hip-hop artist Alpha Leo. The album is entitled The Greatest, and it's available on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. You can get it right now. Alpha Leo actually ran for president in 2016, stomping for reparations, and he's going to be running again in 2020. So get the Alpha Leo's album, The Greatest, right now, iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system. There is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail, or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines, the new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines. Now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
The most intense new video game app has now arrived. A medieval kingdom has been plagued with chaos and disorder. An evil force has dominated the land. And now it is up to the bravest knights to fight back the demonic forces and bring justice to the kingdom of the Moors. Play the newest, most exciting Battlefight game app ever, Moorish Kingdom. Available at moorishkingdom.com.
You're now tuning into the King of Game, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
Yo, what's going on, family? Welcome back to Tariq Radio. And I'm your gracious host, ready to chop up some good game with you guys. We are here. Shout out to everybody in the chat room. I know I was supposed to do the show yesterday, but damn it, we're here. We're here. We're early. I'm trying to get this thing on time as much as possible. Everybody, we only have 10 days left to get down with the call to action for Hidden Colors 5, family. We only have 10 days left, and a lot of times when we do the crowdfunding campaigns, a lot of folks get real busy at the last minute, which is cool, but we need everybody to get busy now to make this thing happen, because understand this, family, this is going to be the final installment of the Hidden Colors series. Hidden Colors 5 is going to be the grand finale in the Hidden Colors series. There will be no other Hidden Colors films after Hidden Colors 5. Because with Hidden Colors 5, I think that we are saying everything that we need to say as far as that is concerned. So yes, this is going to be the grand finale. Now, I will do other films. I will do other documentary films about different topics, just like I did with 1804. But with the Hidden Colors series, this is going to be the grand finale. So we got to make this thing really pop off. And this is the fifth installment. The first one we talked about the general history. The second one, we talked a lot about science and melanin. The third one, we talked about societal rules of racism. We talked about it from a social standpoint. And Hidden Colors 4, we talked about white supremacy from a religious standpoint. And this one, we're talking about dealing with white supremacy from a militaristic standpoint. We're talking about defending and protecting yourself. And that's something that has not been talked about openly when it comes to black people dealing with systematic white supremacy. And I'm going to touch a little bit more on that later. But like I said, this is the grand finale in the Hidden Colors series. Because the thing is, when we're talking about something like black warfare, we're giving the history of black warfare. We're showing you what black people have done in the past, how that can be utilized in the present to protect yourself and defend yourself and get the warrior spirit back into black society. Because we have been permeated by a spirit of fear. And the thing is, when you start talking about warfare and military strategies and science, let's be 100% real. A lot of Negroes worldwide get scared. We start seeing fear pop up. When it's time to talk about doing something, getting up and standing up, no more talking, no more bickering, stand up for yourself. Stop being afraid. All of a sudden, the eyes start bucking a little bit. All of a sudden, we start hearing some mush mouth talk. All of a sudden, we start hearing a little bit of that what about black on black crime talk. You understand me? I see a lot of people, when we were doing all these other projects, people were begging for HC5. And then once we got the crowdfunding for HC5 going and people saw what the topic was going to be, some people started dragging ass a little bit. And I'm not talking about the Melanoid 300. I'm not talking about them. You, the Melanoid 300, who's in the chat room, who's been down from day one. The Melanoid 300 got on it. I'm talking about all the other side watchers, the people who like watching on the sidelines just for the entertainment value. See, the thing is, when it's time to not be entertained anymore and let's get up and let's do something collectively, let's all get on code, all of a sudden, boy, I smell biscuits. Oh, I'm smelling some biscuits from some of the so-called rah-rah crowd. Oh, I see people are pulling up a chair to the same table as Jesse Lee Peterson and putting a little syrup on their biscuits, too. See, fear, family, is no longer an option. Fear is no longer an option. Black people, we've sat up here and utilized fear as a defense mechanism for way too long. There's a reason why I launched the campaign in August. Because I knew that the warriors who had that spirit of Ogun, they would come through, and I knew that there would be some people falling by the wayside. You understand? I wanted that warrior Ogun spirit with this project, because this project is very significant. But again, everybody ain't down with that Ogun spirit. That Ogun spirit is only for a select few, but that select few, they are powerful. It don't take everybody to be down. Understand that. It only takes a small group of people to be on code. Black folks being on code is the most dangerous thing in the history of this planet to the white supremacist. Black people being on code is the most dangerous thing on the planet to the white supremacist. See, the white supremacists, they don't mind black folks yelling, screaming, marching, crying, yelling. They don't mind that. But when we stop yelling, we stop crying, we stop bickering, and then we calmly, without emotions, get on code, all of a sudden, that is a problem. Look at what's going on with our brother, Colin Kaepernick. Shout out to my brother, Kaepernick. Nike just announced that they have a deal with Cap. He's in their new Just Do It campaign. It only made sense for Nike to do this. A lot of white supremacists are mad, but understand this. Nike has made billions of dollars off black customers. So the white supremacists who are upset, they're really powerless to do anything at this point, because the revenue is still going to be driven by the black customer base. So Nike's going to be fine. Now, there are some people who say, well, this deal that Cap has with Nike, and by the way, Kaepernick is going to have his own shoe line. That shit is going to sell through the roof. That's a great thing. That's a great thing. Somebody's in the room saying, Tariq, but buying Nikes, though? Listen. You guys buy Nikes anyway. Let's stop it. All right? Let's not be phony. People talking about Nike is not our friend. I want y'all niggas to listen to me. They're not supposed to be your friend. This is business. See, black folks get on this thing about who's our friend and who likes us. Understand that these people are about business, as should we. We should be about business. I've had several people, I've seen videos of people saying, well, Nike don't really care about black people. They just trying to make money. This is a business move for them. As it should be. Black people, listen to me, black folks. Ain't nobody your goddamn friend. I want black folks to get this shit through your goddamn heads now. None of these people are your friends. None of them. You have no friends. John Henry Clark tried to tell you that decades ago. None of these people are your friends. McDonald's ain't your friend. Nike ain't your friend. Reebok ain't your friend. Facebook ain't your friend. Instagram ain't your friend. None of these people give a fuck about you personally. We get on this thing about somebody liking us. Who's our friend? Who's talking pretty and nice about us? That don't matter. These people are about business. It's always business, never personal. All these people, the Asians who come into your neighborhood whooping your ass and selling you bundles, they clearly aren't your friend. Ain't nobody trying to make friends with you, black people. We got this emotional bullshit about being liked and loved. Get off that shit. Talking about somebody ain't your friend. No, nobody's our friend. We ain't got no friends. We need to know how to understand business and play the business arena in our best interest. We got to start thinking business. When you walk in a room, that's why when we walk in a room with other people from other groups, we all shucking and jiving and hugging and giggling. and they're sitting up getting contracts together, figuring out how they're going to swindle and finesse us out of money. That's why black folks end up on our ass every time we go in here signing deals with people, because we think we're trying to be everybody's friend who likes us or not. Fuck all that. We ain't got no friends. We better know how to finesse business, how to get resources in our hands, how to get on code when we get around these people. That's what you should think. And I say, I take my hat off to Kaepernick because he stood his ground. He stuck to his guns. He didn't get on the coon train like a lot of these other athletes. And he got the bag, which is a good thing. And now Nike is doing ads on the terms of Kaepernick. They're talking about, in a light way, they're bringing to light some of the injustices. In a light way, in a low-key way, but he came to the table being able to negotiate things on his terms. That's a good thing. That's business. Respect to Kaepernick. Learn the game. Fuck a friend. My man went in there and he hustled the game like he should, and he stood by his principles. And now Nike, they're going to be buying NFL ads. So while the games are playing, they're going to be showing commercials with Cap in it. So that's how you finesse the game. They're going to be airing those ads on the NFL shows. That's how you do business. And also, my man Kaepernick, he doesn't have to play anymore. See, the thing is, these niggas think they got to have a job with white daddy for life and daddy's hugging and kissing on them. No, Kaepernick might not ever play again, but the thing is, the endorsements and also his place in history is going to be way more valuable. You got to know how to finesse the game and finesse business in your favor. Understand business. Football careers don't last. See, that's what Negroes think. You're like, oh, Lord, I got to go ahead. All lives matter now. I ain't with no protest now. With Dak Prescott. Football players have a short career span. So understand, when you know how to finesse the game and you stick by your guns and you galvanize a grassroots contingency, some of these corporations are going to have to play ball on some of your terms. And that's okay. That's business. Not that they like you. They're just going to have to play a little bit on your terms. A lot of these major corporations like record labels, understand, they don't like none of these rappers, but there are a few rappers and hip-hop executives who know how to go in here and finesse the game. Master P, he knew how to go into these labels and finesse the game. I know I heard about a deal that Master P did, and I would love to have Master P on Ism Radio with us to talk about this, how he had Universal, I think it was Universal, he had one of them labels give him millions of dollars, and he never delivered the product because they owed him millions of dollars from a previous product. He had another deal that they kind of slighted him on, so he got a new deal, got a lot of money up front, and then told them to kick rocks. Like, this is the money y'all owed me from last goddamn time. That's finessing business. We got to get off that friend thing, family. Because, see, trying to be friends with all these people, see, that's based on fear, too. That's based on being afraid to offend. See, we get around people in the dominant society and then we get scared. We don't want to offend nobody, so we think we got to be in here hugging and kissing and having sleepovers with everybody. We got to show that we're the loyal pet Negro out of fear. Fear is not an option. We got to get that fear thing out of our system. That's why they can finesse us. It's business, never personal. We got to get that personal thing out the mix and not be afraid to do business. And fear's not going to be an option, family, because look, these white supremacists are getting hella on code. These white supremacists are getting major league on code right now. So being afraid to deal with them and confront them in a codified way
you're not going to have the option to be a little scaredy cat and opt out of that. Right now, they're trying to, they're having hearings to try to confirm this new Supreme Court guy, Kavanaugh. This is one of Trump's guys. And I know some of you guys have been watching the hearings on television. The other day, while they were having a hearing, there was a white supremacist suspect, white supremacist female. Her name was Zena. What's her last name? She's connected with the Trump camp. What is her name? I think her name is Zena Neal, something like that. I'm so bad with names. But this woman, let me look her name up real quick because I've been tweeting about it. While Kavanaugh was having the hearing, and this was on live TV, this suspected white supremacist female got a text message. She looked at her phone, and then she got off the phone, and then she slickly threw up that white supremacist hand signal on live television. Now, this is for somebody. Her name is Zena Bash. That's her name. She did that OK symbol, which is the white supremacist hand signal, and she's all clicked in with the Trump click. And this is something that these people like to do over and over again. A lot of people clicked in with Trump. They like to throw up that white supremacist hand signal. So she threw that signal up, and she's looking around and kind of low-key smirking. These are the folks who are connected with people who are trying to be in the Supreme Court, family. These are the people who are trying to be in the Supreme Court. This thing is heavy. These people are sending dog whistles to each other on live television that they're trying to maintain white supremacy. These people are not playing. And again, once you call this out, they'll start trolling and acting like, that's just ridiculous. These people, we don't need to wait on a confession from them. We do not need to wait on a confession from them. Now, look, and they're white supremacists in the chat room right now talking about she's Mexican and Jewish. There are white supremacists in the chat room right now talking about how is she throwing up a white supremacist hand signal and she's Mexican and Jewish. And also, there were some people, like her husband said the same thing. My wife is Jewish and Mexican. She's no white supremacist. I mean, denial and deception, that's part of white supremacy. We're not waiting on a confession from them. Don't let nobody try to fool you with them throwing up their ethnicity or their religion, because that doesn't negate the fact that they can still practice white supremacy. Don't let nobody fool you with that. Understand this. Back in the 60s and 70s, some of the leaders of the American Nazi Party, it was a guy named Dan Burroughs. He was one of the leaders. He was Jewish. There was another person in the American Nazi Party named Frank Collin. He was Jewish too. These were straight up card carrying Nazis, both Jewish. And as far as Hispanic and Mexicans, there's plenty of Hispanic and Mexicans in the alt-right. Some of those people over in Charlottesville who were assaulting black people and bashing their heads in, who got sentenced for doing that, some of them were Hispanic. There are Mexican Nazi gangs in the prisons of LA. The Nazi lowriders are Mexican Nazis who believe in white supremacy. Don't let nobody fool you with all that. They can't be racist because they're Mexican or Jewish. You got George Zimmerman, who's Hispanic and Jewish, who's a straight up white supremacist. There are Asians in the alt-right. And speaking of Asians, I saw a video of an Asian store owner in Kenya sitting over there. Somebody was secretly taping him, and he was over there talking about the people are monkeys and they're dirty and poor and they're monkeys. The Kenyans are like monkeys. This is a global thing. These people all around the world are against us. We have no friends. We have no friends whatsoever. And this fear that we're seeing all around the world from black people, that is no longer an option. Down in New Orleans this week, by the way, there was a white supremacist who went into a black neighborhood in broad daylight and just started shooting. This happened a couple of days ago in New Orleans. Look that up. He just, in broad daylight, went over to a black neighborhood, just stood out there shooting. They arrested him. They're probably going to try to do the whole, well, he's mentally disturbed thing. They're going to probably do that. But we've been telling you guys some of these drive-by shootings and all that. These are white supremacists doing that on the low, and black people are being blamed. Now, they're going to start being open about it now. The purge is going to be wide open. They don't want to start doing this shit on the sneak. They don't want to drive around in those black masks that we've been pointing out. I've been pointing out for years they've been wearing black masks, committing crimes as black people. White supremacists put on these synthetic masks and commit crimes. This has been proven. And we suspect many of these drive-bys are these white supremacists doing that same thing. What they want to do, they don't want to wear the mask. They want to just straight up be able to walk into a black neighborhood and start blasting and then just walk away with impunity. This is why they like those stand your ground laws. Just like down in Florida, the guy went in, started antagonizing black people. A black person tried to back him off of him and they shot him and they didn't want to charge him. The guy down in Florida, they gave him a little lightweight charge that they're going to get him on out of jail with real quickly. They're just running him through the ringer, going through the motions. But fear is not going to stop these white supremacists from attacking us. Fear is not going to stop these white supremacists from coming after us with guns blazing, family. See, we thought we can sit around and just kind of jive and talk about religion and talk about the pyramids. No. That's not an option. We're not going to talk about the pyramids forever. We're not going to talk about religion forever. I keep getting emails over and over again from people telling me, hey man, here in Colors 5, you need to talk about who the real Hebrew Israelites are. Man, in Hidden Colors 5, you need to talk about the Metanetta. Man, in Hidden Colors 5, you need to talk about who the real Etruscans were. Man, we're at another place right now. We talked about all of that in the other Hidden Colors series. See, I'm not going to sit up, and that's why this is going to be the finale. I'm not going to sit up and just talk about the same thing over and over again just to pacify people and give you something to talk about while in the prison of white supremacy. No, because these white supremacists are coming at us. They ain't just talking. They're acting out on stuff now. They're doing ambush attacks all over the place, and we are completely ill-prepared. Don't be scared now. See, everybody was real excited about a possible Hidden Colors 5, but when you find out what we're talking about and it's all about you getting off your ass, all of a sudden, but can we talk about something else too? Can we talk about food and snacks? You understand? Nah. This is something that we gotta really face. We gotta face these fears and we gotta stand up for ourselves. Because the white supremacists, they're getting us prepared to be dominated under complete white supremacist apartheid Nazi rule. They're going to do some population tailoring. They're not going to kill all black people off like our brother Neely Fuller says. What they'll do, they'll do population tailoring. They'll tailor the population, meaning kill off a certain sector of black people globally so that they won't be threatened, but they still need us around in order to dominate, mistreat, and control. So they're going to have some of us around, but we're going to be in a situation like South Africa. where all the resources are going to be pretty much generated into white society, and they're going to be able to dominate and openly control and mistreat you at any given moment. It's going to go back to the old school slavery / Nazi system. And they're doing it already. This is why they're prepping your mind, and they're letting you know they can go kill your kids and arrest your 11-year-old and taser your... I've been seeing 11-year-old children being tased by police over and over again lately. So they're targeting the children. They're getting your mind ready to live completely subjugated. Look at the movies that they got coming out. There's a movie that they have coming out. And understand, the white supremacists, they don't do movies without having a message and a code attached to the movies. This is a major movie coming out. And the movie is about a black girl who falls in love with a Nazi boy. The boy is one of Hitler's youths. And she falls in love with the Hitler youth boy. This is a major movie that's coming out. And they got a, from what I understand, a bedwinch female director as the face of this movie. But you know who's putting the movie out. It's always the usual suspects. Chat room, help me. What's the name of that movie? I always forget the name of the movie. But you guys can look it up. Where the Hand Touch. Somebody said it sounds like Meghan Markle. Why are you bullshitting? You understand? While you bullshitting, look at the Meghan Markle situation. It's like, look, you're going to be subject to the imperialists, the people who raped and subjugated Africa. This is, now we're going to let you up in the royal palace, but you're going to be treated like a pet to a certain degree. But this movie about this girl literally in love with a Nazi. You know what the message is? The message is, look, sure, we're white supremacists, but all white supremacists ain't bad. Even though we're white supremacists with a heart of gold. And if you can just look past our white supremacist views, you can see that there's a heart there. We're good people. We still know how to love. That's the message that they're sending with that bullshit. And they've always tried to send that message, even with the Sally Hemings thing, with Sally Hemings with being raped by Thomas Jefferson. They've always tried to make that seem like some kind of love story. Thomas Jefferson had a mistress named Sally Hemings. She was not a mistress. Mistresses have a damn choice. It's almost like saying she wanted to be raped and molested by Thomas Jefferson. Sally Hemings was a child when Thomas Jefferson was raping and molesting her. You understand the words that the white supremacists use? They always try to make it seem like, okay, yeah, we're white supremacists, but still love us for the heart we have. We still have a heart. It can be a romantic thing being with a white supremacist. Learn how to love your oppressor. You understand? That's why the show Scandal. See, this is they prep your mind for it. This is why we've been calling out Scandal for a long time, which is basically an updated version of the Thomas Jefferson, Sally Hemings story. That's why bedwinches flock to that shit. White zaddy with a heart. This is why we got to be on code to counter those white supremacist narratives. We can't be fearful. Fearfulness is no longer an option, family. We can't be afraid, because that's not going to save you no more. Just from a practical sense, being afraid, that's not going to save you. That's not going to stop these white supremacists from harming you. And what we need, we got to have a network of fearlessness, family. The thing is, we'll have one or two brave people, and we'll prop those one or two brave people up. But those one or two brave people are out there by themselves, and they become targets for the white supremacists who are not by themselves. They are fully codified. And we got to stop doing that. We got to stop letting the one fearless guy be out there by themselves while everybody else is kind of bucking their eyes behind the scenes. We need a network of fearless melanoid people. We need a network of fearlessness, family. We shouldn't just have a Marcus Garvey out there without a network. There was no international or even domestic network. He had followers, but we needed other networks of people looking out for Garvey. Malcolm X was fearless. We didn't have a network of people. Don't let people fool you now. They'll get on the bandwagon after somebody has been martyred. But when people are alive, there was a lot of people against Malcolm. There was a lot of coons around Malcolm. Be very clear. Malcolm did not have a network of fearless people that he can, that he could protect himself with. We got to have a network of people. Look at the Haitian Revolution. When Haiti got its independence, because Haiti, the people became fearless there. They had a spirit of fearlessness there, and they got them white supremacists off their ass from a direct standpoint. But from an international standpoint, they didn't have any other real fearless allies that they could do trade with, that they can continue to do business with. That's why the white supremacists used their economy to resubjugate them. Because when Haiti got their freedom, they were trying to liberate many other nations so that they can rise up and take over and they could have an international network. But unfortunately, the scared masses globally weren't trying to rock like the Haitians were. See, that's the problem. We have one fearless group of people and they don't even have anybody else to build with. They don't even have anybody else to cling on to and rise up with. That's a problem. Because we have too many scaredy cat coons out here who will sabotage any type of black progress. Also, there's a lot of black people globally who just like being up under white zaddy. Going back to Haiti, understand in Charleston, South Carolina, you had brothers like Denmark Vesey, who was fearless, who organized what was going to be the biggest slave rebellion in the United States. He had 9,000 people ready to roll, and what he was going to do, they were going to uprise and rebel in South Carolina, and then they were going to go connect with the Haitians. So slavery could have ended very early in the United States because you did have a few fearless brothers ready to put in that work. What thwarted the Charleston uprising was a group of coons, and they're very particular coons who did it. There was a group called the Brown Fellowship Society, and it was one particular coon who was responsible for helping thwart the Denmark Vesey Revolution. It was a guy named William Pensiel. Y'all look that name up. His name was William Pensiel. He was a mulatto Negro who was a part of an elitist secret black society, which was the precursor to the Boule. It's called the Brown Fellowship Society. Y'all look this up. I want y'all to feel me on this. The Brown Fellowship Society, they were a group of these free Negroes who were the offspring of the white slave owners. So these Negroes could not get into white society because there was, the white supremacists treated them just like Negroes, and they did not want to be associated with full black people. So they created their own little clique and called it the Brown Fellowship Society. They didn't want to say black. They couldn't say white. So they settled for brown. And they would even own slaves in Charleston, South Carolina. Once they heard about the Denmark Vesey Revolution that was being planned, these elitist coons, in one particular, William Pensiel, he said, wait a minute. He told one of the potential rebellers to go tell his slave master what the deal was. And this guy, They were all rewarded. All the coons were rewarded individually for helping thwart the revolution that was going to happen in Charleston, South Carolina. Like I said, slavery would have ended. Slavery in South Carolina and possibly the United States would have ended in the early 1800s if that rebellion had been pulled off. They had so many people ready to roll. That would have spread all across the country. And they would have probably hooked up with those Seminoles, those black people mixed in with those Indians down in Florida. So they were going to put in work, and it was the goddamn coons who messed it up. Because these coons were fearful. What will we do without white daddy? And also, what will we do if these Negroes got in charge, the dark ones? Because they valued being mixed. See, these were the wannabe white supremacists. They valued that white bloodline. So if we have a black revolution and black people are running things, well, damn, I'm not privileged no more. I don't get to feel like I'm a step above the regular Negroes. You understand? So the basis of cooning is fear. How am I going to live without white daddy? And the thing is, family, we're going to have to learn how to conquer fear. You conquer fear by facing fear. That's the only way to conquer it. Sitting up in a room scared, trembling, and coming up with deflective means to not confront your fear, that's not going to save you no more. If you're fearful of something, you look that fear in the face. The first thing you got to do is acknowledge it. You don't overcome fear by just sitting around thinking about it. You don't overcome fear by sitting around online just talking shit about it. You got to put some actions out there. You got to put your hat in the arena. See, that's where the energy comes from. See, people can talk up a good game, but are you putting some real energy out there? Because energy circulates. Energy circulates and energy builds. And we're not putting any energy out there. Talking about some shit, that ain't it. Just talking about it, no. We got to have solution-based conversations so that you can act on it. And a lot of times what we do, we have a fear of failure. A lot of black people, we're real big on being scared to fail, and we're scared of what others will think if we fail. We got to get off that shit. If you do something and you fail, so the hell what? Want black people to get off that fear of failure thing. I don't want to try nothing because I might not be successful at it. I don't want to try this, I might fail. I don't want to start a business, I might fail. I don't want to go here, I might fail. I don't want to get in this relationship because I might fail. I don't want to try another job, I might fail. I don't want to go to school because I might fail. Being afraid of failure and opting out for cowardice is a recipe for cooning. Because that's what coons are. Coons are basically failed Negroes. And you can be a hardcore coon and a soft coon. And there's a lot of soft coons out here. You can talk revolutionary as much as you want to, but if you ain't out there doing anything, you a soft coon. You understand that? Gossiping about bullshit all the time and hating on niggas, that's soft cooning. Because you ain't doing nothing, that means you failed. The fact that you're sitting up here worrying about other people who are doing something, that's the clearest sign of failure. And being a failed coon is no longer an option either. That's not going to save you. Look at Jesse Lee Peterson. Jesse Lee Peterson, he's failed in a lot of things. So he did the coon option. And now, even on his own show, people are calling him all types of niggas. You have white supremacists calling his show, calling him all types of niggas. Being a soft coon, that's not going to help you either. That's no different from the Jason Whitlocks and all these people. And look at, and when I knew, when Kaepernick got that deal with Nike, I knew that the big juicy coon, Jason Whitlock, was going to be on TV. And sure enough, the next day he was on Tucker Carlson, cooning it up. Look at people like him. What has he accomplished? Except sandwiches. What has he accomplished? Nothing. So his job is to be a bit juicy coon, speaking on and trying to tear down other black people who have accomplished things so that he can get butter biscuits from Zaddy. So what if you failed? It ain't about you failing or succeeding. When you try to do something, when you strive for something, it's the journey that matters. I want y'all to feel what I'm saying here. If you strive for something, if you try to achieve something, if you get over your fear and you go for something, if you try to accomplish something, failure and success is really inconsequential. It's the journey. It's the game you learn on the way. Because the game you learn on the way can be utilized in other endeavors that will possibly be successful. You understand me? When I had a book called The Art of Gold Digging. My book, The Art of Gold Digging, was one of my least best-selling books. It sold the least out of all my books. But I made damn near more money on that book than others. Why did I make more money on that book? Because a decade or so ago, VH1 approached me and they wanted to do a reality show based on one of my books. And I told them about that book. And they broke off a lot of bread for me to do a pilot for the Art of Gold Digging book. Art of Gold Digging book is a real short book. It's a real thin book. It's not even that long. You know, I wrote that very quick just to get it out there. And they gave me a grip to do that book, to do the reality show, for the rights to do the reality show. And also what I had in the contract, if the show didn't get picked up, the rights would be reverted back to me. So we did the pilot. The show didn't get picked up by VH1, and I got the rights to the book back. So when we did the pilot, even though the show didn't get picked up, that can be viewed as a failure. Now, I didn't view it as a failure because, number one, the way they did the show, it was going to be kind of ratchet, which I wasn't really with anyway. I should have had more creative control over it. It was almost going to be on some Flavor of Love type of thing, which would not have been a good look anyway. But in the process of doing the pilot for the show, I learned a lot of stuff behind the scenes. I learned from top to bottom how to get certain producers, how to get certain cameramen for the show, how to edit shows, because I was learning stuff in front of the camera and behind the camera. That's what I like to do. And plus, they would have to tell me, because it was my own pilot and I was one of the executive producers, they would have to tell me everything that would happen. They would have to tell me about the casting process. They would have to tell me about the music selections. They would have to tell me about every little detail. So I was learning in the process. So we did this pilot. The show didn't get picked up, but I learned a lot of game, and all the game I learned from watching the behind the scenes stuff with them, I started using that game for my own films, which I had 100% control of, and I learned how to make those things successful based on the game I would learn from being at MTV and VH1. Somebody pointed out Ice Cube. Ice Cube did the same thing with Boys in the Hood. Exactly. He did the behind the scenes stuff. He soaked up game. He was chopping up game, learning the business. When you get into an endeavor, it's the journey of learning the game. Look at Byron Allen. Now, Byron Allen, he started off in the 80s. Byron Allen was known as a corny black comedian. Byron Allen as a comedian was corny as fuck. And I like Byron Allen, but Byron Allen was a corny comedian. And he was known as the corny comedian. Some of his stuff was funny, but it was really for the white crowds, but it was mad corny. So Byron Allen wasn't really a really successful comic. I mean, he was around and he would work, but he wasn't. You still had Richard Pryor doing his thing in the early 80s. Then you had people like Eddie Murphy. You had some heavyweights in the game. So Byron Allen, you know, he would do shows. He did a show called Real People back in the day. I remember watching as a child. And what Byron Allen would do, Byron Allen would be behind the scenes, because I think his mother worked as an executive at NBC, I think. But Byron would come up as a young dude learning the business from behind the scenes. So even though as a comedian, he might not have been a megastar, he wasn't too successful as a comic, Byron was soaking up the game behind the scenes in the process. Yeah, he would get on shows and he would do comedy here and there on different television shows, and it would be so-so, but he was soaking up that game. And then all of a sudden, people looked and saw that Byron Allen was worth $500 million. And they were like, well, damn, how the hell this nigga get all this money? Because he was soaking up that game and quietly using it for himself to build his own company. You understand? He's a billionaire now. It's all about soaking up the game and not being on bullshit. See, black folks, we got this thing where everything is supposed to be a party. See, we want to feel good all the time. And we want to party it up all the time. We want to have a purge party. Just like I talked about in the movie The Purge, the people, you know that there's about to be a purge, and niggas decided to have a damn block party on purge night. They wanted to have a purge party, and then motherfuckers went out there and start killing them. See, we want to have a purge party all the time. Everything, if we gonna die, if we gonna be subjugated, can we just party one last time so we can feel good? We gotta get off that. We negate business and try to be perpetual children all the time. We're gonna have to be adults. I was looking at the Bobby Brown movie on BET the other day. Well, yesterday and Tuesday. I hope you guys saw it. The Bobby Brown story, great story, great movie. And Bobby Brown was real reckless. You know, he made himself out to be the good guy in the movie, but Bobby Brown was real reckless with the drugs and the all that old shit, the drugs and the drinking and the partying. Because Bobby Brown was sitting on $25 million, and you fuck off $25 million, and he was talking about in the movie when he was getting with his new wife. She was like, how you fuck off $25 million? He was like, well, shit, you know, drugs, just doing stupid shit. He said, one time I bought a Benz from a dude just so I can drive to the airport, and then I left the car. Like, he was doing stupid shit like that, and his lady was like, why would you do some dumb shit like that? He was like, well, shit, I was high. See, the thing is, Bobby should have been on top of his business. But understand, with Bobby, a lot of folks don't know, and he talked about this in his book, he got molested by a minister. He went to, they put him in a group home because his mom was selling dope, and they put him and his brother in a group home for a hot minute. It wasn't that long. And one of the ministers there at this group home molested him. So that's the thing. Bobby's kind of been carrying that thing all of his life. See, a lot of times when shit like that happens, we got to get therapy. We try to just pile up drugs and liquor and baby mamas and all that to try to rectify some vile shit that happened as a child. And then we become perpetual children because of something that happened as a child. A lot of folks don't know that. See, when I see folks acting reckless, people don't act reckless unless there's a reason. When people are big drug addicts, 9 times out of 10, somebody molested them. Whitney Houston was molested by a relative too. That came out later. When somebody's just literally killing themselves with dope, usually that's somebody who's been molested as a child. And that's something that we as Black society, we're going to have some type of forums and centers and institutions to deal with that. We're going to have to fund our own institutions to deal with the psychological trauma from that. But a lot of times when things like that happen, you feel like your childhood was taken away. So when you become an adult, you want to become the perpetual child. And you negate having or taking care of business, and all your business falls into shambles. And then you want to have a perpetual pity party, and that ain't going to happen. We got to get off that. Because after a certain age, people don't want to have pity on you no more. We're going to have to handle business. And I'm not trying to shit on Bobby Brown. That's horrible what happened to dude. And my man has had a lot of death in his life. Horrible story. But his daughter died. It was horrible shit. And also, speaking of Bobby Brown and his daughter, that Nick Gordon guy, because they mentioned him in the movie. In the movie, they mentioned that this Nick Gordon was with Whitney Houston when she died, and he was with Bobby Christina when she died, and they both died the same way. And that Nick Gordon dude is weird as fuck. I've seen some interviews with this dude. That nigga is he's moist and a weirdo. Something's really funny style with that dude. And that Nick Gordon recently, earlier this year, he got arrested for domestic violence with another chick he was with. So something's up with that weird ass dude. That Nick Gordon, something's up with that nigga. I don't know what is, something weird with that nigga. He's real moist. Because I saw a mugshot of that nigga in jail. That nigga had his eyebrows arched and everything. It's something's up with that nigga. I don't know what it is, but something's up with that dude. But I digress as far as that. And speaking of the new addition in Bobby Brown, I saw an interview recently with Ricky Bell. Shout out to Ricky Bell, him and his wife. I think they were on Vlad, and Ricky Bell, you know, they were talking about the money problems the New Edition was having and all that. And we saw in the New Edition movie how, you know, they didn't really have anybody looking out for them as far as business. They just kept getting raped over and over by different managers. You dig? This is why we need relatives. Somebody in their family should have been able to go out there and handle business with them. But a lot of these dudes came from, you know, these projects, single mother homes. These moms don't know how to handle no business. They don't understand contracts and money like that. So it's a perpetual cycle. When you go into an arena and you ain't got nobody helping you, and as a child, you don't know. These guys were kids, so they don't know. And you don't have an adult who don't know. You're setting up a whole new cycle of fucking. And when I mean fucking, financial fucking. Now, Michael Bivins, he wised up. Michael Bivins started looking at contracts, and he started looking at some of the executives. He said, wait a minute, let me stop trying to be like all these other artists. Let me start looking at Gerald Busby and all these. Let me see what they do. Let me see how they get down. And that's why Michael Bivins starts stacking his money up. He starts signing different groups. He learned the game. And what's funny, Ricky Bell was doing an interview recently. They were talking about when they were kids, they went on tour with Rick James. And they and everybody and their mama got a Rick James story. He said they went on tour with Rick James. You know how, you know, like when they would see adults, sometimes adults would kind of play fight with him. He said Rick James would really be punching them and shit. Rick James would come up. Rick James would be beating their ass. Ricky said Rick James would be like, come here, you little bastard, and start punching. And he would hit them with real punches. And I'm dying listening to this. Rick James, crazy ass, was up there beating up the fucking New Edition. Like Rick James would be whooping their damn ass. Then they would go up to Rick James' house. There'd be cocaine and bitches all over the place. And these niggas would be like 15 years old, just getting traumatized being around Rick James. But I digress as far as that. But the point is, we got to understand handling business. And we got to understand not being afraid to be adults, not being afraid to handle business. Because, see, they like Black folks. You know why we like acting scared all the time? You know why we like being scaredy cats? Because scared Negroes make the white supremacists comfortable. the white supremacists, they love a scary chicken shit Negro. And we like making them comfortable. That's why when you look at old movies from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, all those old movies, it was always the scared black folks, the scared Negro running around, bucking his eyes. Oh, Lord, there's a ghost. Oh, feet don't fail me now, Lord. All those movies where those black entertainers would get big money from the dominant white society, these were the Negroes who knew how to act scared. They would always be scared and trembling and shaking. Oh, Lord, yes, boss. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, Lord. Oh, oh. All of those old movies have the scared, buck-eyed Negro. Even when Richard Pryor started getting his weight up in Hollywood, I remember as a kid in the early 80s when Richard Pryor would be in all these Hollywood movies, because Richard Pryor would get top dollar. They would give Richard Pryor millions of dollars. He was one of the highest paid black actors in Hollywood in the 80s. And all those movies Richard Pryor was in, Richard Pryor, they had him bucking his eyes. He was running around groveling, acting scared. I remember he was in one of the Superman movies, and Superman was flying with him. He's like, oh, oh, goddamn. Oh. He was all acting scared. They had Richard Coonan in a lot of those movies. And I love Richard Pryor. They had Richard Pryor on the fucking Coon train in a lot of those movies. They even had a movie with Richard Pryor called The Toy, which Richard Pryor, it was a white rich kid, bought him as a toy. It was some real coon shit. A lot of folks even back then were like, Richard, what are you doing? They had him playing property. Yeah, the toy was, oh, you understand? But look back, even the Klan, the KKK got started because the white supremacists wanted to scare black people. They put on sheets and they acted like ghosts and they went into black areas trying to scare black people from voting. So they were using that fear, and black people understandably had a reason to be fearful back then, because you know, you were really outnumbered then and the open white supremacy laws were against you. But the KKK got started from acting like ghosts to scare black people by wearing those white sheets and hoods. Even now, when you look at films like Star Wars, these major blockbuster films, and I make jokes about that all the time. The Finn character, in the whole movie, he's running around bugging his damn eyes, scared. Oh, Lord, oh, 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 Ray! Oh, Lord, I'm in outer space. I'm so scared and out of space. Oh, Lord Jesus! You know, the whole movie, he's running around scared. They love scared Negroes. And we love making the white supremacists comfortable. So we got this scared, cowardly disposition that we think we're going to take so we can be safe. And that's just not going to work no more. Our job is to not make white supremacists feel comfortable. No, our job is to survive and make sure that our offspring survives. I was just on The Breakfast Club this week. Shout out to Charlamagne and Brother Envy. My sister Angela Yee wasn't there, but shout out to her. Love her. Great interview. A lot of people said it was short. It was fine. The interview was like 23 minutes. It was fine. I said what I had to say. Very popular interview. A lot of folks loved the interview. You know, real to the point, dropping some real good game in the interview. You guys can go check it out. Just type in Tariq Nasheed, The Breakfast Club interview. And in the interview, I'm talking about what's going on out here, and I'm very calm as I'm talking about it. Very, very calm, very concise, just real articulate. Not too much emotion in the game. And if you look at the comments section, it's loaded with white supremacists and coons. And understandably, some of them are troll bots because some of them are using the same phrases. If you look in the comments section of something and you see the same phrases over and over again, usually those are automated troll bots. Somebody's set the, they've punched in a couple of keywords to say over and over again. So usually that's the case. So it's a lot of white supremacist trolls in the chat room hating heavy. Oh, that nigga Tariq. Oh, that race baiter nigga. Oh, they're very upset. And also a lot of those comments are coming from Crispy. Crispy's very jealous. Crispy, and I know you're listening, Crispy, you decrepit coon. The fact that Crispy wants to get on that show so bad, and it's just painfully jealous. He's so painfully jealous that I've been on that show multiple times, and Crispy tried to get on the Breakfast Club, and he was literally standing outside the building begging to get on, and they wouldn't let him on. So the many of the comments are Crispy coons, but many of those comments, the majority of the ones talking garbage, are white supremacists trolling. And having a person like myself talk about race and white supremacy in a calm, codified, non-emotional manner, that's scary. That scares them. They don't like us talking calm. They like us yelling and screaming, because they understand all that yelling and screaming, that's a smokescreen to cover up fear. When you yelling and screaming, they get real calm. The white supremacists know, I got this nigga, because I'm going to use my system of white supremacy to get him. You dig? So when you're talking calm and you're making sense and you're putting stuff out there in a very plain way, in a very simple way, in a very concise way that's easily verifiable, and you're putting everybody on code and you're doing it without yelling, screaming, or name calling, that's the thing that puts the white supremacists in fear, because that's going to catch on, and other black people are going to see that, and they're going to get on code, and they're going to start thinking. When you're yelling and screaming, you're emotional, and you, fuck a cracker, fuck all these goddamn crackers. No. They're like, okay, this nigga ain't thinking, and we got him. Now we're going to use his anger and aggression to justify harming him. You understand? And in the interview, I said something, and I want people to really take something away from that. I talked about how we got to stop using these disempowering terms like minority and people of color and all these other terms, because these terms are used by other groups, and they're used to marginalize and push us out the wayside. They're used for other people to latch on to us to act like they have a comparative struggle, and they don't. And we are afraid to say black. We are afraid to say, hey, as black Americans, we need this. So we let the white supremacists come up with little code words for us, and out of fear, we go along with their code words. Because we understand this. We understand that anything that benefits black people specifically, there will always be a backlash. We got to stop being afraid of that backlash. There's enough of us to stand together and say, okay, let there be a damn backlash then. We understand if anything benefits black people remotely, the thought of something benefiting black people specifically that other people can't really latch on to, there's going to be a backlash. That's why affirmative action, which benefits every other person, but the idea that it benefits black people, they always look at that as something negative. We got to stop worrying about that white supremacist backlash. Would there be a backlash over the Hidden Colors series? Of course. So what? Not afraid of the backlash. We got to keep on handling our business and not being afraid of that backlash. And like I said, you can't get freedom if you're scared to speak freedom. I'm going to say that again. You will never get freedom if you are afraid to speak freedom. If you are afraid to say, this is who I am. I'm a black American. This is who I am. If you're listening overseas, if you say, hey, I'm a native Kenyan, I'm a native Nigerian, I'm a native Ghanaian, and this is my land, and I'm not going to let these white supremacists subjugate me. The problem is we get scared and we start talking this dumb shit. Ain't no white supremacy over me. You try to talk tough. That ain't nothing but fear. I ain't gonna call it no white supremacy. I call it white inferiority. Supreme means I can kill you with impunity and you can't kill me. You can sit up and say they're inferior all day. But at this point in time, the people who believe in white supremacists can kill you with impunity and you can't kill them. Meaning they can kill you and walk down the street to the sheriff department, say I killed that nigga because he pushed me, and the sheriff is going to be on code with him, and the white supremacist is going to go home and watch Fox News and get some donations. And you cannot do the same. You can't do the same at this moment. That's the reality of the game. This is why we got to be on code. We got to stop being afraid. We got to stop deflecting. Being a coon is deflecting. Talking tough, rah-rah, metunetter talk, that's deflecting. Just because you talking hella black but ain't putting no action behind it, that's deflecting, and that's deflecting, and that's fear. That's deflecting, and that is fear. And being an internet hater, that's deflecting and fear. That's another thing. When people are trying to do things and you got a bunch of niggas on the internet, fuck him. That nigga is a fraud. I think he is a fraud and I don't like it. That's coonery and deflecting. That's you niggas being scared. Hating on a sister who's doing her thing. If a sister has a nail shop or a hair salon and you hating on her, but you go to the Asian shop and you get your ass whooped, you're deflecting and you're soft cooning. You understand? We keep doing all of these deflective actions to run away from fear. Fear is not an option at all. And do not be afraid, family, to get involved with HC5. I know we're talking some hardcore stuff. We're talking about standing up for yourself. I know that's not popular with white zaddy. I know that's not popular with mommy. I know you can't have bedroom talk with them about something like African warfare, standing up for yourself. I know that's an uncomfortable conversation to have with your white coworkers. Some things, it ain't for you to discuss with them anyway. But we do need you to get involved and don't be afraid. This is the last installment of the Hidden Colors series. This is the grand finale. This is being locked in history. This is going to be in the annals of history for the next few hundred years. This is your last chance to get involved with the historic Hidden Colors series. After this Hidden Colors series, there will be no more episodes of Hidden Colors. We've already etched our place in history with the Hidden Colors documentary series. They're going to be talking about the Hidden Colors documentary series for centuries. And I thank the 300 that's been down from day one. All my other folks, we need you to get down too and make it happen and be a part of this monumental documentary series, the grand finale. We're going to put a period at the end of it. And you will have your name right there along with the other greats. We got heavyweights in this film. That's the reason why I got so many heavyweights in this film. This last installment is going to have to really be the icing on the cake. That's why I didn't pull out no punches. We already got them locked and loaded. We got the heavyweights in this talking real talk. Not just from a scholarly level, from a street level. That's why I got my man Dame Dash in it. That's why I got the OG Ice-T in it, who's very underrated. Ice-T is my brother. They should do a movie about Ice-T. People, I think this generation don't know how important Ice-T is to the game. Ice-T's very important, dude. He's the real creator of what we call gangster rap. This brother stood up to politicians who were trying to bury him with his song Cop Killer. They were trying to bury this dude. And also, he's put a lot of people on in the hip-hop game. But again, we're talking about so much stuff. We got Sister Shahrazad Ali. She's going to be in the film. We got a bunch of new faces in there. We got Brother James Small, Brother Kaba. We got some heavyweights. My brother Jabari, I've been promoting this brother's book. We got some badass folks. Queen of Four, this sister, legendary sister out of New York. We got some heavyweights in this film. No, ain't no Hidden Color 6. It is not going to be no Hidden Color 6. So again, family, this is the last installment of the Hidden Color series. Like my man Malema said, Malema did a speech, and he was talking about how nervous people were getting because they're going to take their land back, and we see a lot of coons in certain positions of power in South Africa are trying to thwart the brothers and sisters who are trying to stand up for themselves. Malema said, hey, we're going to get our damn land back. Don't be scared now, y'all. Y'all elected us. Don't get scared. We're going to do what we said we're going to do. See, the thing is, we like woofing and huffing and puffing, but when it's time to actually act on standing up to them damn white supremacists, I don't know about that. Oh, we want to start talking about different shit, just like in Africa. They want to start talking about tribal shit. I saw some shit where Malema was going back and forth with this sister about, she's talking about, well, the Khoi tribe, we're the only ones who should be talking about land. They want to deflect. That's fear. That's fear and deflection. They want to start talking about other shit instead of talking about standing up to them white supremacists. And from what I understand, you got people like Steve Bannon. He's on his way over there to South Africa to kind of galvanize all those white supremacist Afrikaners. These people ain't playing. We don't have an option to be fearful no more. This is a global thing. And like Malema said, don't be scared now. And I ain't about no sloganisms. We gonna get our land back from these people. It ain't about sloganisms no more. You understand? We ain't selling no fucking wolf tickets like black folks like doing. Man, I blow this motherfucker up, goddammit. Ain't no wolf tickets. These white supremacists globally, over there in South Africa, they got little militia groups that they're working on over there. Over here, I keep showing you all these militia groups that's training over here. They ain't selling no damn wolf tickets. All this yelling, fuck that. This ain't right. I got rights, goddammit. No. You better start thinking, and we better start being on code. You dig? So everybody, family, go to the Indiegogo page. Get involved right now, family. It's 3,200 people in here right now. Everybody should get down and be a part of HC5 right now, clicking the link right there in the page. Y'all be good, family. I will holla at you guys this Sunday. And y'all have a good night or good afternoon, because it's early as hell. All right?